Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2014 call. My name is Sarah, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode, and later we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star zero, and we'll be happy to assist you. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and James Simms, CFO. Please proceed.
Thank you, Sarah. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our conference call for the first quarter ended March 31st. I'm James Simms, CFO, and with me here in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, our CEO, and Dick Nagel, our Chief Accounting Officer. Today, we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the first quarter. This press release is available on the investor page of our website, www.vicorpower.com, and we have filed a Form 8-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners the conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay of the call will be available beginning at midnight tonight through May 7th. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the listener passcode will be 304-01713. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will be available on the investor relations page of our website beginning shortly after its conclusion. I'll start this afternoon's discussion with a review of our financial performance for the first quarter, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. Since it's less than 6 weeks ago that we last spoke with investors addressing Q4 and full year 2013 results, this evening's discussion will be something of an update on those remarks. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor reported a net loss for the first quarter of just under $5.4 million, representing a net loss of $0.14 a share on revenue of $53.2 million. For the fourth quarter of 2013, we reported a net loss of $13.1 million, or $0.34 a share, on revenue of $55.3 million. For the first quarter of 2013, a year ago, we reported a net loss of just under $5 million, or $0.12 a share, on revenue of just under $42 million. In calculating Q1 EPS, we used total basic shares of 38,541,000, very close to the 38,539,000 total basic shares used to calculate Q4 EPS. We used 41,167,000 total basic shares to calculate EPS for Q1 2013, reflecting the higher share count prior to the completion of our two tender offers during Q2 2013. While we do not report non-GAAP results, I remind listeners the reported results for the fourth quarter of 2013 included a non-cash increase in our provision for income tax of approximately $10.2 million, representing a full reserve against our net deferred tax assets, which increased our reported Q4 loss per share by approximately $0.26. As such, our first quarter loss per share of $0.14 is more appropriately compared to a pro forma loss per share for the fourth quarter of approximately $0.08. Legal fees were again a major contributor to our quarterly loss. We also suffered from the anticipated decline in VI Chip shipments associated with the transition by our major customer in the data center space to its next-generation motherboard. Consolidated revenue for Q1 2014 declined 3.7% sequentially, reflecting a 30% decline in VI Chip shipments. However, we are encouraged by the recovery of shipments for the brick business unit, which increased 3.3% off of a substantially larger base. The BBU saw improvement in North American volumes, both in modules and custom solutions. Q1 2014 revenue of $53.2 million was 27% higher than revenue for the same quarter last year. BBU quarterly revenue increased 14.3% year over year, while VI chip revenue almost doubled year over year. We are also pleased that recognized quarterly distribution revenue increased over 24% sequentially. As anticipated, given recent booking trends, turns volume increased, rising to just under 37% of total shipments for the quarter. International revenue declined to just under 61% of total revenue, down from a record level of 64%, reflecting a broad range of circumstances. Notably, VI Chip shipped lower volumes to Asian contract manufacturers working on behalf of our data center customer, while Vicor Japan also experienced an unexpected reversal in trend, with a 30% decline in the dollar value of shipments, in part a result of lower unit volumes and in part a result of the impact of the market rise in the relative value of the dollar to the yen during the fourth quarter. These revenue declines were offset by growth in developing markets. European shipments were mixed, reflecting continued uncertainty across Europe and adjustments we've made to our distribution partnerships. Consolidated gross profit margin was essentially unchanged sequentially, ending at 42.8% compared to 42.4% for the fourth quarter. Consolidated gross profit margin of 39.6% for Q1 of 2013. While recent variability in our quarterly consolidated gross profit margin has been attributable to VI chip volume variances, the impact on margin from VI chip's volume decline was offset by improvement in the BBU's margin driven by higher volumes, better mix, and lower manufacturing variances. Consolidated operating expenses rose 4.3% sequentially, but when legal fees are excluded from both quarters' expenses, such expenses actually fell 1.5% sequentially. General administrative expenses declined 4.5% sequentially when legal fees are excluded, even though we recorded approximately $250,000 of Q1 expenses associated with our annual financial audit. Marketing and sales expenses increased 5.3% sequentially, largely due to higher headcount, higher commissions paid due to shifts in mix, and higher recruiting expenses. Research and development expenses were flat quarter to quarter. Total headcount stood at 1,009 as of March 31st, up from 1,002 as of December 31st, 2013. At the end of the first quarter of 2013, a year ago, total headcount was 989. Turning to new orders, first quarter bookings reflected first quarter shipments, in that the expected temporary decline in VI chip bookings was more than offset by robust rebound in BBU order volume. BBU order flow increased over 17%, with our legacy module business up over 21% sequentially. Increased activity in other areas offset the decline in the dollar value of Japanese orders. Booking patterns into April for the BBU continue to follow recent trends. Q1 VI chip bookings declined more than anticipated, falling 43%, but expected new orders for the production runs of the current generation of Sandy Bridge 48-volt processor solutions began coming in just last week, in addition to a first significant production order for our next-generation solution. We now expect to receive additional order flow for the VTM and PRM-based solution to satisfy production requirements into the third quarter, overlapping with a production ramp of the CHIP VTM and SIP PRM system for new Haswell-based motherboards, which we expect to begin shipping later this quarter. Picor continues to gain momentum with its expanding line of cool power SIP point-of-load regulators, with design activity leading to encouraging sizable orders. These early orders have been for SIPs in standalone applications, but we are actively expanding our cross-selling efforts with solutions incorporating our chip current multipliers, similar to the solution we will be shipping to our data center customers starting in a few months. During the coming months, look for FICOR to introduce several new products, including an expansion of its ZBS buck line to include 48-volt input models, thereby broadening the range of applications served. To conclude on order activity, total one-year backlog stood at $41.6 million at the end of Q1, down 7% sequentially, with 76% of this backlog scheduled for shipment during the current quarter. Cash flow from operations for Q1 fell to a deficit of $4.5 million, largely due to the quarter's net loss. Capital expenditures for the quarter declined to $1.6 million, as much of the additional investment for the expansion of our chip production capabilities has yet to be incurred. As stated last quarter, we have refined our budgets for 2014 expansion and currently expect the actual dollar investment for the year will be lower than originally expected, in the range of $4 million. We have been successful in repurposing existing resources to meet expected 2014 chip capacity needs. Turning to our consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, although day sales uncharacteristically increased to 50 days at quarter end. However, a substantial dollar volume of past due accounts were collected after the quarter close, and our DSOs have now fallen back to their usual quarterly level. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter were essentially unchanged, with an annualized turnover climbing slightly to 4.2 times, representing a new high. There was no meaningful change to our reserves. Cash and equivalents stood at $50.3 million at the end of the quarter, down from $56.3 million at year-end. This figure excludes investment securities with a par value of $6 million, carried on our balance sheet at an estimated fair value of $4.9 million, representing roughly 81% of par value. Turning to expectations for the second quarter, we expect bookings will end the second quarter ahead of the first quarter, assuming the recent trend for the VBU and the receipt of additional bookings for VI Chip's first-generation data center solution, which, as I stated earlier, have started to arrive. Keep in mind the lead times for VI Chip orders are currently running 12 weeks, which would imply that any new orders received would be shipped in Q3. We are targeting Q2 revenue of approximately $52 million, which would be sequentially slightly lower, reflecting the Q1 gap in the VI Chip order flow. While BBU revenue is expected to increase, based on backlog and assumed turns, we expect VI chip revenue to experience a temporary further decline from the Q1 level. Accordingly, we expect reduced efficiencies and overhead absorption in VI chip, which will likely be offset by any improvement in BBU results, contributing to a Q2 quarterly loss. As I stated last quarter, any improvement in our operating performance will likely be offset by legal fees for the foreseeable future. Now I'll turn the call over to Patricio.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie stated, Q1 was characterized by an improvement in BBU's performance, offset by a temporary setback in VI chip sales to a large data center customer. We had expected a decline in shipments and orders for the first generation of our VR12 VI chip solution, given Q4 bookings and forecast from our customer. And we have communicated this expectation to investors. However, we did not anticipate deferral of significant volumes in anticipation of accelerated deployment of next-generation VR 12.5 motherboards using our next-generation chip-SIP system solution, with the consequence being a weaker second-quarter forecast. This issue highlights the need to further diversify our VI chip customer base, which is a strategic priority supported by our new product introductions. We're leading the way with a highly differentiated approach to power distribution, power conversion, and power management with our chip and SIP platforms, which provide a compelling value proposition to an expanding list of major customers. While Q2 looks to be behind plan, Q3 is shaping up to be a busy quarter, with an expected pickup in shipments of first-generation VI chips and the production ramp of next-generation chip VTMs and CPRMs for VR 12.5 systems, which recently got underway. This will be the first wave of revenue growth based on expanding product portfolio of chips and SiPs that are setting new standards for power system performance and cost effectiveness in processor and memory applications, among others. I'm pleased to report that our new product platforms, packaging technology, and application-specific integrated circuits, in which we've invested considerably, are now supporting the introduction of exciting new products and opening new market opportunities at an accelerating pace. I'm also pleased to report that we are bringing to fruition new chip-inside, brick, and power system product platforms with new products which will soon start to refresh the classic portfolio of our brick business unit and revitalize the growth opportunity of our power systems business. I will now provide a short update on our patent litigation. Earlier this month, the Patent Trial and Appeal Board of U.S. Patent and Trademark Office reversed on appeal by Syncor the decision of a patent office examiner who had rejected all claims of one of Syncor patents as invalid. We will appeal this reversal to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. As has been reported in the news, on March 31st, the Federal Circuit Court in the Eastern District of Texas ruled on a motion by Cisco Systems, a co-defendant, to sever our litigation into two separate cases to be tried sequentially. Cisco had taken the position, opposed by plaintiff Syncor, that its case against Cisco and Vicor should be severed to prevent the prejudice and jury confusion that will result from Cisco and Vicor having to defend their different and complex cases together, which had been part of Syncor's game plan. The court agreed with Cisco and has established two new cases. We are pleased with the court's decision as it will provide Vicor with the opportunity to unequivocally prove that our products do not infringe. To assert lost profit claims against other defendants, Syncor has refused to publicly admit that Vicor bus converters do not infringe, even though Syncor has known all along that our high-frequency, high-density bus converters are fundamentally different from and far superior to Syncor's bus converters, which are limited by switching losses to much lower operating frequency with inferior bandwidth, density, and efficiency. We are pleased that the court has ruled against Syncor on a number of key issues. Having our case severed from Cisco, it reset our trial date from July to later this year, and our current expectation is that our case against Syncor will go to trial in October. This concludes my prepared remarks, and Jamie and I will now take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Our first question comes from Dino Diana from Nantucket Hill. Please proceed.
Hi there. Can you talk about the VI chip opportunity in the data center? Namely, I think in the past you've spoken about the opportunity within the processor segment, and then on the last call you mentioned that the new edition will give you the opportunity to penetrate the memory rails opportunity. Could any way to just kind of flesh that a little bit, size it, give us the potential of what that can ultimately get to?
Yes. To give you an appreciation of the chips and SiPs that provide these incremental opportunities, it may be good to introduce some nomenclature. As part of a scalable packaging platform, we define chips by their metric sizes. So to set things in perspective, our next generation solution for processor applications is based on what we call a 1323 chip, which is a device which is 13 millimeter in one dimension and 23 millimeter in the complementary dimension. These devices are very thin. They're only 5 or 6 millimeters thick in the general ballpark. So that being the solution for processor application, we've recently come up with a chip which is essentially half the size of the 1323. It's called the NO623. So it is the same length, but approximately half the width, which implies that we get twice as many per panel. So instead of getting about 40 per panel, we get about 80 per panel. And this is sized for memory applications where the typical load is not as significant as it is for a processor application. So a typical processor application might draw a steady-state current of 90 amperes with peaks of 180 amps, and the 1323 is sized to provide the kind of current capability both from a steady-state perspective in terms of path requirements. That's one of our key advantages. In memory sockets, the current requirements are typically considerably lower, and hence there is an opportunity for a chip of smaller dimensions, same level of efficiency performance, same level of density performance, but a considerably reduced cost to us, the cost scaling, pretty much in proportion to chip size, so as to enable covering more of the customer requirements within the motherboard. So this 0623 has recently been sampled to customers, we're looking to, as the year progresses, begin to expand our footprint beyond processor sockets.
Okay, and so if we assume, a Google or an Amazon designs a server, for a manufacturer to build, and you're designed in, let's say, what kind of Vicor content would there be in the processor side of the house, and then maybe what would that look like on the memory side? Maybe I don't know if there's an ASP you can give or some kind of color around, which basically just trying to understand how big this opportunity can be if you start to gain traction in a big way there.
So the opportunity is already quite significant, as implied by earlier comments we made in this call and in earlier calls. The addition of memory would, roughly speaking, double the business opportunity in terms of the value proposition per motherboard. As you can imagine, in the motherboard, there is more than one processor and quite a bit of memory. So the value proposition associated with being able to expand from just addressing the processor requirements to being able to address processor memory is quite substantial. It is part of a grand strategy that we've been focused on for quite some time. And this strategy is to enable a complete solution direct from 48 to the point of load that does not stop at the memory socket. So as suggested in the early remarks by Jenny, as you've heard, there is this upcoming product releases by Picor that are aimed at enabling direct solutions 48 to auxiliary rails at lower power levels. These are going to be extremely cost-effective single-stage converter solutions. We're also, within VHIP, planning new devices that are going to continue to scale down the current and power capability even below the level of the 0623 that I referenced earlier. We have a new device roughly half that size, which is in the works. So with an expansion of the chip VTMs, which are the point-of-load current multipliers, an expansion of the power metrics of Picor backboost and ZBS regulators that provide, in effect, the regulation function upstream of the current multiplier, and with the availability of an increasing portfolio of direct 48 to point of load regulators, we aim to cover all of the rails of a typical motherboard.
Okay, one more question before I jump in. I'll jump in the queue. You mentioned HP and Amazon were mentioned in your last call as data center partners. Can you talk about what that means? Are they customer success stories today, or are they just, you know, testing and evaluating the products?
I'm not going to comment with respect to specific customers, applications, and opportunities because we respect the confidentiality of what our customers do with us.
Okay. Can you just say what a data center partner means?
I think those words are pretty self-explanatory. You know, to the extent that we are at liberty to disclose some of this information as reflected in your comment, I think those words speak for themselves.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from Jim Bartlett from Bartlett Investors. Please proceed.
Yes. Could you give me a better understanding what's going on the VI chip side? You said that business would be ramping up in the third quarter. How long can that part of the business show increases?
Well, so there are two components to that. You know, one component relates to the data center applications, you know, where we've had a lull having to do with the crossover to the next generation platforms, you know, which has caused careful monitoring of inventory levels and a temporary lull in activity. Since, you know, earlier on they've been concerned with respect to capacity, so the customer had, in effect, buffered through extra inventory their potential demands and potential concerns with respect to our capacity. But to your point, that is an opportunity that over time will give way to our next generation chipset using chips and Vicor SIPs as more advanced, more cost-effective, higher performance, higher margin for us alternatives to the older solution. But going back to what we call the classic VIA chips or first generation products, we have been seeding many customers and many applications in diverse markets for many years, as you know. And some of these design activities, by their nature, including some that are defense applications, you know, have had a very long gestation. You know, some of them are coming to fruition in the next year. There are some that are very, very substantial in terms of revenues and particularly profits in terms of margin for us. So we don't expect that the VIA chip part of the business, the classic VIA chip or first generation VIA chip product, to fade away, just like the classic bricks after 30 years haven't faded away. We expect them continue to grow, but we expect to be able to layer on with the chips and SIPs much faster growth opportunities because of their intrinsic better value proposition and better figure merit. So that's where a lot of the action is focused. That's where obviously all the new product development activity is focused. That's where new product introductions, you know, as recently announced and, you know, soon to be announced in the next month and as months progress through the year. That's where chips and SIPs is where most of the action is going to be.
So however, I realize that. I was just wondering when you might see an inflection point of the old VI chips when that starts to turn down. Is that
It's not going to turn down because, again, we have customers with design-ins that were secured literally 2 years ago that are only going into production in 2015.
Okay.
And these are some of these are very large opportunities. So we are continuing to sell classic VIA chips. There is an expanding market opportunity for them with our distribution partners. You know, we're seeding new applications. But we're going to be layering on chip and SIP opportunities because In general terms, they deliver considerably more performance and efficiency with a cost structure that nearly cuts the cost in half.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from John Dillon from DNB Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, Patrizio. I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit more information on the bookings that came in last week, and in particular, what that means to Q3 revenue. For example, will we see a spike up in Q3 revenue as a result of the production orders from the data centers that are coming in?
So we are expecting a ramp to take place with respect to the chip SIP set that I referenced earlier with the 1320 chip. The 1323 VTM, and I think it's a 1014 SIP. We received the first substantial order last week. We expect additional orders to come in as this quarter progresses. The customer is highly motivated to drive a fast ramp because of the combination of economies that this new solution brings about. And so that's part of the combination of factors leading us to expect considerable improvement in the second half of the year. You know, if we look at it from a bookings perspective, we expect bookings this quarter to be ahead of last quarter, and we expect the bookings in the third quarter to ramp further. And we're looking over the next four quarters at a pretty significant step up, particularly focused on VHIP and PIGOR systems. So PIGOR in particular will enjoy a significant step up due to their contribution to the next generation solution, which will have a pretty dramatic impact on the revenue level.
Do you think we'll start seeing a spike up in revenue on the third quarter then?
Well, I don't know what you mean by a spike up. I think we're going to see a progression, and let's wait and see, you know, how it shapes up so that we can, you know, quantify it with common expectations. I think all that I can tell you at this point is that we expect to see a positive progression coming from a variety of different applications.
Okay, and you said you had a substantial booking, and I have the same question for you that you asked me. What does substantial mean?
You know, 50,000 sets.
50,000. I'm sorry, chips. Is that what you said?
50,000 chipsets.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that is substantial. Okay. You know, I've been following you a long time, Patrizio, and I don't think I've ever seen Vicor in a better strategic position. And I'm wondering if you can comment on that. I mean, what I've seen before is you've always had the size, you've always had performance, but you haven't necessarily had the cost card for a broader market. Now what I think you've got is I think you've got the size, you've got the performance, but you've also got a cost card for a much broader market. Can you kind of validate that? Am I thinking along the right lines here? And, you know, will this lead to an inflection point in revenue soon? Can you give me a little help on that?
So I would say that we always had the vision. We always had a very clear understanding of what needed to be done. Doing it is a different story, and particularly for a company whose business model is so innovation-focused as it is for us. As you know, we all know, innovation has its pitfalls in terms of you know, long gestation periods, significant investment. So to quantify the level of investment that we made from a financial perspective, you know, we've invested about $250 million at this point in our next generation capabilities, and I'm referring to, generally speaking, the VHIP and PIGOR product capabilities. So financially, that's obviously a very significant investment for a company whose revenue levels historically have hit a ceiling of around $250 million. we're looking to accomplish over the next several years is to break and bust through this historical ceiling. And to your point, this is going to be enabled by a cost card that we never enjoyed before. So we all have to recognize that having a much better mousetrap in the marketplace gets you into the door, but it doesn't get you designed in, because most customers are very cost sensitive. And in effect, they want the better performance, but they want it ideally at a lower cost, or at least at a competitive cost. And historically, we haven't been able to accomplish that to the degree that is necessary. With the scalability of our chip platform and the companion development by PowerCore of SIP regulators, we have for the first time a cost card that makes a very compelling proposition to customers, where they can enjoy significantly higher efficiency, which translates in reduced costs for data centers, which is obviously a very hard balance, while at the same time also make it from the perspective of the cost of the boards and the cost of the power system very competitive and attractive. So we fully expect that this is going to enable us to bust through past ceilings in terms of revenues. And with that, we expect to see a significant return on investment, on our consumer investment in our technology platform. And that's predicated simply on a cost structure that is to a high degree, fixed. We have an infrastructure which is relatively expensive at the $200-$250 million per year run rate. It would be a lot less expensive, relatively speaking, as we get past these levels.
Sounds good. And before, you've talked about, I think, a 3x5 plan, triple the size of the company in 5 years. Is that right? And is that really, are we there now? Are we really there that we can expect that?
We are very focused on that. I think the whole company is aligned to achieve those goals. We obviously made the investment in the front end of the business in various ways to enable it. Now that from a product, a portfolio, and scalability of power components, we have the wherewithal to deliver it. So to your point, we think we are at a unique time where everything is coming together to enable the delivery of some significant financial performance.
Okay, great. Congratulations on the increase in the BBU and also the data center bookings. Thank you very much, Patrizio.
Great. And we have another question coming from Jim Bartlett from Bartlett Investors.
Yes, could you just expand a little bit more on the splitting of the cases in two, and what rulings they made, how this is positive for you in exactly what is going to be decided in the October case?
So, as mentioned earlier, on a motion by co-defendant Cisco, the court recently, just a couple of weeks ago, ruled that the cases or case should be severed into two cases. Suggested earlier, Cisco and Vicor view this as a very positive development in that it will enable us to avoid falling prey to the kind of game that Syncor has historically played in terms of overwhelming their opponents by, among other things, relying on their inability to defend themselves by not having adequate time, a share of time, in the courtroom to present their case. So we think it is very useful development, and we're very focused on having our days in court later this year and prevailing on products that clearly do not infringe.
Until then, the legal expenses will continue at the high rate that they've been doing this last quarter.
Well, until then, and then means very likely October, the legal expenses will be whatever they need to be to ensure that we don't fall by the same, you know, sword that affected the earlier defendants.
Could you also just, you introduced this new chip-based BCMs, and could you talk a little, this was what you introduced in April, a little bit more of when you might see traction in that product?
So I think you're referencing a device that was introduced within, I think, the last couple of weeks, which is what we call a 6123 or 61 millimeter long, 23 millimeter wide, device, of which we get 9 per panel. This device is rated at 1750 watts as a power density of over 2 kilowatts per cubic inch. Just to set things in perspective, that density is about 7 or 8 times greater than any competitive product. So we're talking not margin improvements, we're talking about something that is essentially an order of magnitude greater density. It sports an efficiency of approximately 98%, which means only 2% of the power delivered gets lost within the device's heat. It has great bandwidth, very low noise. It's a great performer in every respect. It's got a very low cost structure. It supports advanced solutions. We have a number of customers that are very interested in this device as part of a general trend to 48 volt systems, which obviously play an important role with respect to our point of load PRM VTM solutions.
So in terms of getting traction on revenue from this device, is this a possibly a fourth quarter event?
For that chip, I would think it's probably sometime next year.
When do you think you'll start getting traction on some of the products which you will be introducing to reinvigorate the BBU?
So there's going to be product introductions starting in 1 month, and then there's going to be additional product introductions shortly thereafter. We have a new, very scalable platform that is very cost-effective. It's cheap inside. It provides a combination of great functionality, including advanced thermal management, filtering, transient protection, within a package that is very easy to deploy, very scalable in terms of accommodating chips of different sizes, short and long. It will accommodate, to begin with, the devices as small as a 2223 all the way up to a 9323, with the power capabilities starting at the low end in the few hundred watts, a couple hundred watts, all the way up to a couple of kilowatts and more over time. We think that this power component and power system capability represents an opportunity that is greater in magnitude than the opportunity that the brick represented back in the 80s because of a variety of key attributes, not least of which, in answer to the earlier question, cost effectiveness. In other words, with this new packaging technology and chip inside the methodology, we're going to be able to provide complete front-end solutions that measured in terms of cents per watt, are going to be extremely cost-effective while sporting fantastic efficiency and density performance. So I expect this over time to take our brick and power system business in its own right to significant new levels of revenues and profitability. More than a defensive strategy, it's a very offensive strategy in terms of advancing new kinds of market opportunities that historically our brick business unit and power system business could not address because their cost card was not nearly good enough.
And is this something we could see in the impact of and starting in the first half of 2015, or is it be later than that?
Well, my expectation is that because of the nature of these products being primarily front-end products, chassis mount type of products, their time to market and time to revenue is characteristically shorter, considerably shorter than the kind of longer gestation designing such as the data center or earlier generation high-end server type of applications, which characteristically involved several years worth of designing gestation. With front-end systems, there can be applications that go from sampling to initial production in as low as 6 or 9 months. So we're going to have significant new product introductions based on this power system capability starting in the June timeframe and progressing through the second half of this year. And so I would expect that based on 6 to 9 month gestation period, some initial contribution in the first half of 2015.
And could you talk a little bit about the gestation period for another data center customer?
There's activity in the works. I'm not going to make any forecast with respect to dates, but I think it's safe to say that what's good for some is generally good for others, and they recognize that.
Thank you.
All right, and there are no further questions in queue.
Thanks very much. We'll be talking to you in 3 months.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.